This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has been booked on felony charges of racketeering and conspiracy linked to his alleged efforts to overturn his 2020 re-election loss in the state of Georgia. This marks an unprecedented fourth time that Trump was arrested and booked in the past 5 months. Trump was released pending trial after paying a $200,000 bond. Before boarding his plane at Atlanta's airport, he spoke to reporters but did not take questions.
I've never had such support, and that goes with the other ones too. What they're doing is election interference. They're trying to interfere with an election. There's never been anything like it in our country before. This is their way of campaigning. And this is one instance, but you have three other instances. It's election interference.
Trump and 18 other defendants in the Georgia indictments will next be arraigned on the charges, and a trial date will be set. A U.S. intelligence assessment says an international explosion caused yesterday's plane crash in Russia that's presumed to have killed a mercenary group leader. We get more from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
The crash came 2 months after Yevgeny Prigozhin's Wagner group staged a short-lived uprising challenging Vladimir Putin.
It's likely Prigozhin was killed.
Brigadier General Pat Ryder at the Pentagon would not say exactly how intelligence officials believe the plane went down.
The press reporting stating that there was some type of surface-to-air missile that took down the plane. We assess that information to be inaccurate.
One official says it's very likely Prigozhin was targeted for taking on Putin. Who in remarks carried on RURTR called the Wagner chief a talented man who made serious mistakes. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And for more news, please join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The first results emerged on Thursday in Zimbabwe's election after delays forced a second day of voting in a small number of neighborhoods, and civil society activists were arrested. We get more. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston.
Delays forced an additional day of voting in dozens of neighborhoods. The Electoral Commission blamed late printing of ballot papers after court challenges. Some polling stations also stayed open late on Wednesday. In the capital, Harare, police said they had detained dozens of people during raids. Some of the targets included well-known civil society groups that had said they were monitoring the vote. President Emmerson Mnangagwa and Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change are facing off once again this year after running against each other in 2018. Many have expressed hope for change in Zimbabwe after years of economic hardship, but analysts say it's unlikely the ruling ZANU-PF party will loosen its grip on power after more than four decades.
The U.S. Defense Department announcing Thursday the U.S. will begin training Ukrainians to fly and maintain F-16 fighter aircraft at Morris Air Base in Tucson, Arizona. Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder told reporters training is expected to begin in October for several pilots and dozens of support workers following language training in Texas in September.
Although some Ukrainian pilots have English language skills, we are anticipating that all of the pilots coming to the United States will require some level of additional English language instruction given the complexities and the specialized English that's required to fly these aircraft.
The Pentagon did not have exact numbers of Ukrainians taking part in the training. In a statement, the White House said President Joe Biden and Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky spoke Thursday about U.S. plans to train Ukrainian pilots to fly the F-16 fighter planes in the war with Russia. In other news, a lawsuit against a utility has been filed over the fires that ravaged Lahaina in Maui and Hawaii. We get more on that story from the AP's Shelley Adler.
Maui County has sued Hawaiian Electric Company over the fires that devastated Lahaina, saying the utility negligently failed to shut off power despite high winds and dry conditions. Witness accounts and video indicated that sparks from the power lines ignited fires as utility poles snapped in the winds, which were driven by a passing hurricane.
That was Shelley Adler reporting. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to the Break Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, August 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting has begun in Zimbabwe following Wednesday's polls.
ZEC has declared ZANU-PF as winners in 90 local authority wards across the country, which were uncontested. For contested seats, collation of results is taking place.
Gabon voters cast their ballots tomorrow, Saturday, in presidential and parliamentary elections. Niger's political crisis is affecting food prices for its neighbors. The BRICS alliance has six new members. We'll get an analysis of the impact on global politics. Kenya's president holds a virtual meeting with TikTok CEO amid calls to ban the app.
Like we have moderation capacities of the other platforms, we can agree on a mechanism to moderate content in their space so that we can reduce the content that is negative.
And a conversation with a fellow of the Young African Leaders Initiative, also known as YALE. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's posts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway in Zimbabwe following the conclusion of a one-day voting extension on Thursday. Meanwhile, police raided the offices of some civil society organizations and arrested 39 staff for allegedly coordinating the release of election results. Rutendo Manwere in Harare brings us up to date.
The extended voting hours by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to polling stations that did not get voting material on time on Wednesday has ended. ZEC has declared ZANU-PF as winners in 90 local authority wards across the country, which were uncontested. For contested seats, collation of results is taking place and some results have been posted outside polling stations. Meanwhile, police spokesperson Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyeti has confirmed the arrest of 41 members of civic society from the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, the Election Resources Center, and another organization called Team Pachedu for allegedly violating the Electoral Act.
We've arrested 41 suspects, who include a minor, who are currently assisting the Zimbabwe Republic Police with investigations. The Zimbabwe Republic Police received information and then subsequently conducted a raid at Holiday Inn in Harare and also at number 44 Down Avenue in Belgravia, and the number 27 Milton Park in Harare, and the number 501 The Grange in Harare. What was happening was that the institutions had people who were coordinating the collection of information, the tabulation of information in relation to the voting statistics and also the counting of the votes.
In a statement today, ZESNY and ERC have condemned the raid that was done by the police yesterday and said their workers were simply doing the work that they were accredited to do as observers. For VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Gabon voters go to the polls tomorrow, Saturday, in presidential and parliamentary elections, where incumbent President Ali Bongo Ondimba, whose family has ruled the country for 56 years, is running for re-election. As the VOA's initial Arnold reports from Washington, political analysts say a last-minute rule change could pose a challenge of the winner, if the winner is anyone other than Ali Bongo Ondimba.
In July, the Gabonese Center for Elections announced a new rule requiring that any single vote for a presidential candidate will be a vote for members of parliament running on the same ticket as the presidential candidate. Critics have denounced the rule, saying it favors the ruling party as some opposition parties have not fielded candidates for the National Assembly. Ondo Menga-Jean Cyril, a political analyst in the capital Libreville, told VOA, the rule change puts candidates who are not running on any party ticket at a disadvantage. He mentioned the likes of Alexandre Barrault-Chambrier of the Rassemblement pour la Patrie et la Modernité, or the Rally for the Fatherland and Modernity Party. Chambrier is part of the opposition coalition supporting the candidacy of former education minister Albert Ondo-Ossa.
Those who don't have the party and who had their candidate, I mean, they are independent candidates. They don't know how they're going to do because they don't have a candidate at the presidential election and they had candidates for the legislative elections. It means that they are going to sacrifice their members of parliament because they could not be elected. After the 26th of August, we're going to have a National Assembly that is going to be empty. If Albert Ondosa is elected president, you won't have members of parliament at the assembly to support the policy of the government.
14 candidates are vying for the Gabonese presidency, including the ruling party's Ali Bongo Ondimba, who is seeking a third term. Five candidates joined the Autonomous 2023 coalition to support Ondo Osa. Moisi told VOA the coalition's support could undermine the president's goal of a third term.
I think that will be changed the game in the election because the coalition of different important members of the opposition, that will be very important and will very give force, power to Mr. Ondo Osa, and this candidate could win the election.
The analysts also voiced deep concerns that there are no national and international independent election observers to monitor the vote. They say it is the first time in the history of Gabonese elections that even international journalists have been denied accreditation to cover the vote. For VOA News, I am Ignatius Ano.
Sanctions imposed on Niger following the July military coup have resulted in rising food prices across West Africa, as well as worries that the Niger situation could spiral out of control. Sinanu Tor reports from Accra.
At the Agbogbloshie market in Accra, traders saw through heaps of rotten onion stock to salvage the good ones to sell. Ghana imports about 70% of its onion from Niger and has been experiencing shortages since the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, closed the borders around Niger following the July 26th coup that ousted President Mohamed Bazoum. Mamoudou Alhado is an onion trader and says the regional security challenges are disrupting the food supply chain, raising prices.
Before, when they take the onion from Niger, they can pass Burkina to Ghana. But because of jihadists, you know jihadists, there are many there. They are attacking the cars. So later, they are returning to Benin and enter Togo and come to Ghana.
A 2022 report by the Global Network Against Food Crisis placed about 41 million people in West Africa and the Sahel region at risk of experiencing an acute food crisis or worse. Ziad Hamwi is a co-chair of the Food Trade Coalition for Africa. He says ECOWAS' decision to place border sanctions on Niger threatens the entire region's food security.
There's a lot of food across the region. The problem is not with growing the food. The problem is with moving the food from the areas of production to the areas of consumption.
Hamwi calls on the regional bloc to prioritize food security in the approach to the Niger coup.
We have to start by examining the deficiencies in our regional agriculture value chains and to look at what really the problems are, to address these problems and to avoid the scenarios happening over and over again because of this nexus between security and economics and politics.
ECOWAS says it is prepared to send troops against Niger's military junta leader if they cannot be persuaded to restore constitutional order. Security analysts have criticized the move, noting the absence of a solid plan for military intervention in the region or any plan to deal with refugees and other likely consequences of a war. Mutaru Mumuni Mukhtar is the executive director for the West African Center for Counter-Extremism. He says Niger has existing challenges with violent extremism and ethnic conflicts that threaten the entire region.
So these things are makes the country very vulnerable for any kind of military intervention. So when you intervene militarily without a blueprint for containing possible fallout from it, there's a tendency that vulnerable young people who are unemployed, jobless, frustrated, angry young people could be, you know, transformed into violent rebel-type groups in support of the coup leaders in the country. And that can have a huge impact on security in the sub-region.
Advocates continue to urge ECOWAS to solve the Niger crisis diplomatically to avoid any economic and security catastrophe for all of West Africa. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, August 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson Omale Sports. The BRICS group of emerging economies, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is admitting 6 new members, its leaders announced. On Thursday, on the final day of their annual summit, Kate Butler in Johannesburg asked political analysts to weigh in on the expansion of a group that considers itself an alternative to the U.S.-led world order.
On the third and final day of the summit in Johannesburg, its host, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, announced that BRICS had decided to admit Argentina, Ethiopia, Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates in January of 2024. While the bloc's leaders all expressed their support for the decision, analysts say expansion has been spearheaded mainly by a Russia increasingly isolated by Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine, and China, which hailed the move as historic. While critics are divided over the success of the bloc so far, with some saying it's mainly symbolic, the group already collectively accounts for 40% of the world's global population and about a quarter of global GDP. And the new members will certainly add to both. But like the current disparate group, which includes 3 democracies and 2 autocracies, the new members are not all natural allies, noted Priyal Singh, a researcher at the Institute of Security Studies in Pretoria.
My first impression is that it's quite a strange, odd grouping of countries to be admitted. It's, you know, very highly concentrated amongst Middle East and North African countries, which is going to give that region of the world a lot of sway over the BRICS grouping moving forward.
Singh said that like 2 of the bloc's current members, China and India, which are involved in a border dispute, several of the new additions also have tense relations.
Tensions between Ethiopia and Egypt, for example, could also very likely escalate over the coming years and could undermine the coherence of the BRICS grouping, very similar to what we've already seen between India and China over the last couple of years.
Ethiopia and Egypt have had differences over the construction of a massive hydroelectric dam on the Nile River. Likewise, Iran and Saudi Arabia have a history of diplomatic and military hostility, and they have been involved for years in a proxy war in Yemen. They also make strange diplomatic bedfellows, according to Stephen Groost from the South African Institute of International Affairs.
Might be some surprises there. Particularly Iran and Saudi Arabia in the same organization, given their rivalry over many years, although the Chinese did broker a rapprochement earlier in the year.
The 6 nations that will be admitted next year are only a fraction of some 40 countries that have expressed interest in joining the bloc, which positions itself as a champion of the developing world, or what's dubbed the Global South. In its final declaration at the end of the summit, the BRICS leaders also spoke out about the need to reform global financial institutions and move away from the dollar-dominated system towards greater use of local currencies. Throughout the summit, Ukraine was the elephant in the room, with Russian President Vladimir Putin attending remotely to avoid possible arrest under an international criminal court warrant. While all BRICS leaders expressed their desire for peace, there was no direct criticism of Russia's invasion. Ukraine also went unmentioned, at least directly, in the group's final declaration, which referred to numerous other conflicts by name and expressed support for other nations' sovereignty. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The short-form video hosting service TikTok will work with Kenya in reviewing and monitoring its content. This agreement was reached during a virtual meeting on Thursday between Kenya's President William Ruto and TikTok Chief Executive Officer Xu Zichu. The meeting comes a few days after a Kenyan wrote a letter to the parliament requesting to ban the TikTok app due to what he termed its indecent content. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
The meeting between Kenya's President William Ruto and TikTok Chief Executive Officer Xu Zichu comes a few days after a heated debate ensued when a Kenyan Bob Ndolo petitioned Parliament to take immediate action to safeguard Kenyans from a harmful material in the platform. During the meeting, President Ruto and TikTok agreed to ensure that its content adheres to the guidelines.
I know we've had a conversation as a country around TikTok and some of the challenges that are in that space. And like we have moderation capacities of the other platforms, YouTube and Twitter, we can agree on a mechanism to moderate content in their space so that we can reduce the content that is negative and leverage on the monetization that is benefiting a lot more people.
The new development means that inappropriate or offensive content will be removed from TikTok. The platform, on the other hand, agreed to set up a Kenyan office to coordinate its operations on the continent. Some Kenyans make money from TikTok accounts, and banning it may affect their sources of income. President Ruto says Kenya receives more than $3 million every month from TikTok.
We are increasing our revenues as a country from this space. We need to manage the negative effects, but we need to promote the positive effects that are making our artists, content creators, and many other people in that space to explore opportunities, make money, and grow their talents.
In his letter to the parliament, petitioner Bob Ndolo complained that the content that is being shared on the social media platform is inappropriate. He says it's promoting violence, vulgar language, explicit sexual content, and hate speech, all of which are a serious threat to Kenya's cultural and religious values. He added that the platform has shared information about its users with third-party companies without users' consent. However, members of parliament say it may be difficult to ban social media apps. The majority leader of the National Assembly, Kimani Ichung'wah, said that Parliament cannot ban the app since it's beneficial to the young generation. He, however, says moderating content must be looked into.
There is nothing criminal, there is nothing evil being on TikTok, Honorable Speaker. I am also on Snapchat, Honorable Speaker. And all these apps are my teenage daughters who have downloaded them on my phone, shown me how to use them. Therefore, Honorable Speaker, as much as I feel what Mr. Ndolo says, there could be an element of abuse of all these apps.
Meanwhile, in Eastern Africa, the Somali Ministry of Communication and Technology announced its decision to ban TikTok, basing on its belief that the app has negative influence on the youth. Countries like Japan, Canada, Denmark, France, Australia, among others, have banned the use of TikTok on government devices. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Sacramento, California.
On Thursday, we had a special guest here at VOA in Washington. Several fellows with the Young African Leaders Initiative, also known as YALI, is a U.S. State Department program that helps young leaders build tools to foster economic growth and democratic structures on the continent. The visitors tour our building, and by my colleague Carol Van Dam caught up with one of them, Asafika Mpako, from South Africa, to talk about the skills they learned during the program.
I work at the intersection of research and policy, and as I look towards the next step in my career, I'm really interested in working on policy development and policy implementation. So it was very important for me to join this program, to come to the United States to see the type of policies that have been implemented in the areas of education, of healthcare, and to draw important lessons that I might perhaps ponder on and contextualize to fit the South African case. And it was important also for me to see women who are in political leadership, who are policymakers, who are judges, who occupy positions of substantial influence, and to be inspired by them, because I think that oftentimes you can feel downtrodden as a woman in predominantly male-dominated spaces, and I needed that encouragement, and this was the perfect place to find it.
So what do you hope to do with the experience that you gained here when you get home?
I work for a survey research organization, Pan-African. We work across 42 countries on the African continent, and we survey Africans on their experiences of democracy, governance, and quality of life. And what we do with that data is that we take it and we feed it to policymakers and policy advocates to ensure that Africans have a voice in decision making and in policy making. And so what I hope to do is to continue that work, to continue to elevate African voices.
That was Yali Fellow Asafika Mpako of South Africa speaking with VOA's Carol Vadem here at our Washington studio. Democratic Republic of Congo on Thursday rejected accusations by Human Rights Watch that the opposition was facing intimidation and other repressive hurdles in the run-up to the presidential elections. On Tuesday, Human Rights Watch said in a report that opposition presidential candidates and their top officials had suffered a wave of arrests and restrictions on fundamental liberties ahead of the December 20 ballot. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. Begin the sports with the Premier Club competition, the CAF Champions League. After a highly entertaining opening round of the CAF Champions League first preliminary round, clubs are preparing for yet another action-packed weekend of African club football. After holding on to a narrow 1-0 victory in Ghana, Madema SC will travel to Nigeria with a slim advantage ahead of their return leg with Remo Stars at the Remo Stars Stadium in Ikene. Madema's head coach, Evans Augustine Adote, has affirmed his team's commitment to leave no stone unturned in their upcoming encounter with Remo Stars.
I have nothing to say, this is how we are going to play, but it's a matter of making sure we keep the one goal behind. We go in the fight for a win, or we can defend the one-to-one goal. Trust me, we are not going to come back empty hands.
In Zambia, Power Dynamos host Namibia's African Stars after a 2-1 first leg loss in Soweto. A match to certainly look forward to this weekend is without a doubt Al Hakli Benghazi's trip to Aba in Nigeria, where they will face former champions Enyimba FC of Aba. The two sides produced one of the most electrifying, high-scoring fixtures last weekend that concluded in the 4-3 victory for the Libyans, who will have their work cut out in Aba. Moving over to Cote d'Ivoire, CAF Africa Cup of Nations 2023 hosting venue, Yamoussoukro Stadium, will play host to ASEC Mimosa against Cotton Sports of Benin. The two sides played out to a goalless draw in the first leg, paving the way for another tightly contested match where both sides will be going all out for the result. Away from football news now to basketball. FIBA Africa has concluded plans to host the FIBA Africa Regional Youth Camp aimed at developing young talents interested in the game of basketball on the continent. For the first youth camp of the year, boys will gather in Bamako, Mali from September 20th to the 22nd. An all-girls camp will then take place in Kigali, Rwanda from September 26th to 28th. In each event, 4 to 5 players from 15 countries and 15 coaches will be in action, with 15 female coaches attending the Kigali event. Victor Williams is the CEO of NBA Africa.
It's important to the NBA to support FIBA in the regional camps because we have a shared commitment to growing the game on the continent. Predictable pathway for kids to go from grassroots to elite.
President Paul Kagame of Rwanda has challenged athletes in Rwanda to report sports administrators who mistreat them while they are representing the country. Kagame was addressing more than 2,000 youth from different parts of the country during the 10-year anniversary of the Youth Connect at the Itari Conference Arena, Rusororo. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malle in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.